openly. Dare you think of what they might now be suffering, or what Saruman might now have learned to our destruction? I owe much to Aemma, said Theoden. Faithful heart may have froward tongue. Say also, said Gandalf, that to crooked eyes truth may wear a wry face. Indeed, my eyes were almost blind, said Theoden. Most of all I owe to you, my guest. Once again you've come in time. I would give you a gift ere we go, at your own choosing. You have only to name aught that is mine. I reserve now only my sword. Whether I came in time or not is yet to be seen, said Gandalf. But as for your gift, lord, I'll choose one that will fit my need, swift and sure. Give me Shadowfax. He was only let before, if lone we may call it. But now I shall ride him into great hazard, setting silver against black. I wouldn't risk anything that is not my own, and already there is a bond of love between us. You choose well, said Theoden, and I give him now gladly. Yet it's a great gift. There is none like the Shadowfax. In him one of the mighty steeds of old is returned. None shall return again. And to you, my other guests, I will offer such things as may be found in my armoury. Swords you don't need, but there are helms and coats of mail, of cunning work, gifts to my fathers out of Gondor. Choose from these ere we go, and may they serve you well. Now men came bearing raiment of war from the king's hoard, and they arrayed Aragorn and Legolas in shining mail. Helms, too, they chose, and round shields. Their bosses were overlaid with gold and set with gems, green and red and white. Gandalf took no armour, and Gimli needed no coat of rings, even if one had been found to match his stature. For there was no habit in the hordes of Edoras of better make than his short corslet forged beneath the mountain in the north. But he chose a cap of iron and leather that fitted well upon his round head, and a small shield he also took. It bore the running horse, white upon green, that was the emblem of the House of Eol. May it keep you well, said Theoden. It was made for me in Thingol's day, while still I was a boy. Gimli bowed.
I am proud, Lord of the Mark, to bear your device, he said. Indeed, sooner would I bear a horse than be borne by one. I love my feet better, but maybe I shall come yet where I can stand and fight.
It may well be so, said Theoden. The king now rose, and at once Eowyn came forward, bearing wine. Ferthul Theoden Hall, she said, receive now this cup and drink in happy hour. Health be with thee at thy going and coming. Theoden drank from the cup, and she then proffered it to the guests. As she stood before Aragorn, she paused suddenly and looked upon him, and her eyes were shining. And he looked down upon her fair face and smiled, but as he took the cup, his hand met hers, and he knew that she trembled at the touch. Hail, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, she said.
Hail, Lady of Rohan, he answered.
But his face now was troubled, and he didn't smile. When they'd all drunk, the king went down the hall to the doors. There the guards awaited him, and heralds stood, and all the lords and chiefs were gathered together that remained in Edoras or dwelt nearby.
Behold, I go forth, and it seems like to be my last riding, said Theoden. I have no child. Theodred, my son, is slain. I name Eomer, my sister son, to be my heir. If neither of us return, then choose a new lord as you will. But to someone I must now entrust my people that I leave behind, to rule them in my place. Which of you will stay?
No man spoke.
Is there none whom you would name? In whom do my people trust?
In the House of Eol, answered Harmer.
But Eomer, I can't spare, nor would he stay, said the king, and he's the last of that house.
I said not Eomer, answered Harmer, and he isn't the last. There's Eowyn, daughter of Eomund, his sister. She is fearless and high-hearted. All love her. Let her be as lord to the Eolingus while we are gone.
It shall be so, said Theoden,
Let the heralds announce to the folk that the Lady Eowyn will lead them."
Then the king sat upon a seat before his doors, and Eowyn knelt before him, and received from him a sword and a fair corslet.
"Farewell, sister daughter," he said. "Dark is the hour, yet maybe we shall return to the Golden Hall. But in Dunhaddow the people may long defend themselves, and if the battle go ill, thither will come all who escape."
"Speak not so," she answered. "A year shall I endure for every day that passes until your return." But as she spoke, her eyes went to Aragorn, who stood nearby.
"The king shall come again," he said. "Fear not. Not west, but east, does our doom await us."
The king now went down the stair with Gandalf beside him. The others followed. Aragorn looked back as they passed towards the gate. Alone, Eowyn stood before the doors of the house at the stair's head. The sword was set upright before her, and her hands were laid upon the hilt. She was clad now in mail and shone like silver in the sun. Gimli walked with Legolas, his axe on his shoulder.
"Well, at last we set off," he said. "Men need many words before deeds. My axe is restless in my hands, though I doubt not that these Rohirrim are fell-handed when they come to it. Nonetheless, this isn't the warfare that suits me. How shall I come to the battle? I wish I could walk and not bump like a sack at Gandalf's saddle-bow."
"A safer seat than many, I guess," said Legolas. "Yet doubtless Gandalf will gladly put you down on your feet when blows begin, or Shadowfax himself. An axe is no weapon for a rider."
"And a dwarf is no horseman. It is orc necks I would hew, not shave the scalps of men," said Gimli, patting the haft of his axe.
At the gate they found a great host of men, old and young, all ready in the saddle. More than 1,000 were there mustered. Their spears were like a springing wood. Loudly and joyously they shouted as Theoden came forth. Some held in readiness the king's horse, Snowmane, and others held the horses of Aragorn and Legolas. Gimli stood ill at ease, frowning, but Eomer came up to him, leading his horse.
"Hail, Gimli, Glóin's son," he cried. "I haven't had time to learn gentle speech under your rod, as you promised. But shall we not put aside our quarrel? At least I will speak no evil again of the Lady of the Wood."
"I will forget my wrath for a while, Eomer, son of Eomund," said Gimli. "But if ever you chance to see the Lady Galadriel with your eyes, then you shall acknowledge her the fairest of ladies, or our friendship will end."
"So be it," said Eomer. "But until that time, pardon me, and in token of pardon, ride with me, I beg. Gandalf will be at the head with the Lord of the Mark, but Firefoot, my horse, will bear us both, if you will."
"I thank you indeed," said Gimli, greatly pleased. "I'll gladly go with you, if Legolas, my comrade, may ride beside us."
"It shall be so," said Eomer. "Legolas upon my left, and Aragorn upon my right, and none will dare to stand before us."
"Where's Shadowfax?" said Gandalf.
"Running wild over the grass," they answered. "He'll let no man handle him. There he goes, away down by the ford, like a shadow among the willows."
Gandalf whistled and called aloud the horse's name, and far away he tossed his head and neighed, and turning sped towards the host like an arrow.
"Were the breath of the west wind to take a body visible, even so would it appear," said Eomer, as the great horse ran up until he stood before the wizard.
"The gift seems all ready to be given," said Theoden, "but hearken all. Here now I name my guest, Gandalf Greyhame, wisest of counsellors, most welcome of wanderers, a lord of the mark, a chieftain of the air lingers while our kin shall last, and I give to him Shadowfax, prince of horses."
"I thank you, Theoden King," said Gandalf. Then suddenly he threw back his grey cloak, and cast aside his hat, and leapt to horseback. He wore no helm nor mail. His snowy hair flew free in the wind, his white robe shone dazzling in the sun.
"Behold the White Rider," said Aragorn, and all took up the words.
"Our king on the White Rider," they shouted. "Forth, Eorlingers!"
the trumpet sounded. The horses reared and neighed, spear clashed on shield. Then the king raised his hand, and with a rush like the sudden onset of a great wind, the last host of Rohan rode thundering into the west. Far over the plain, Eowyn saw the glitter of their spears as she stood still, alone before the doors of the silent house. Chapter 7. Helm's Deep. The sun was already westering as they rode from Edoras, and the light of it was in their eyes, turning all the rolling fields of Rohan to a golden haze. There was a beaten way, northwestward along the foothills of the White Mountains, and this they followed, up and down in a green country, crossing small, swift streams by many fords. Far ahead and to their right the misty mountains loomed. Ever darker and taller they grew as the miles went by. The sun went slowly down before them. Evening came behind. The host rode on. Need drove them. Fearing to come too late, they rode with all the speed they could, pausing seldom. Swift and enduring were the steeds of Rohan, but there were many leagues to go. 40 leagues and more it was, as a bird flies, from Edoras to the fords of the Isen, where they hoped to find the king's men that held back the hosts of Saruman. Night closed about them. At last they halted to make their camp. They had ridden for some 5 hours, and were far out upon the western plain, yet more than half their journey lay still before them. In a great circle, under the starry sky and the waxing moon, they now made their bivouac. They lit no fires, for they were uncertain of events, but they set a ring of mounted guards about them, and scouts rode out far ahead, passing like shadows in the folds of the land. The slow night passed without tidings or alarm. At dawn the horn sounded, and within an hour they took the road again. There were no clouds overhead yet, but a heaviness was in the air. It was hot for the season of the year. The rising sun was hazy, and behind it, following it slowly up the sky, there was a growing darkness, as of a great storm moving out of the east. And away in the northwest there seemed to be another darkness brooding about the feet of the misty mountains, a shadow that crept slowly from the wizard's veil. Gandalf dropped back to where Legolas rode beside Eomer.
"You have the keen eyes of your fair kindred, Legolas," he said, "and they can tell a sparrow from a finch a league off. Tell me, can you see anything away yonder toward Isengard?"
"Many miles lie between," said Legolas, gazing thither and shading his eyes with his long hand. "I can see a darkness. There are shapes moving in it, great shapes far away upon the bank of the river, but what they are I can't tell. It's not mist or cloud that defeats my eyes. There is a veiling shadow that some power lays upon the land, and it marches slowly downstream. It's as if the twilight under endless trees were flowing downwards from the hills."
"And behind us comes a very storm of Mordor," said Gandalf. "It will be a black night."
As the second day of their riding drew on, the heaviness in the air increased. In the afternoon, the dark clouds began to overtake them, a sombre canopy with great billowing edges flecked with dazzling light. The sun went down, blood red in a smoking haze. The spears of the riders were tipped with fire as the last shafts of light kindled the steep faces of the peaks of Three Hirn. Now very near they stood, on the northernmost arm of the White Mountains, 3 jagged horns staring at the sunset. In the last red glow, men in the vanguard saw a black speck, a horseman riding back towards them. They halted, awaiting him. He came, a weary man with dinted helm and cloven shield. Slowly he climbed from his horse and stood there a while, gasping. At length he spoke.
"Is Eomer here?" he asked. "You come at last, but too late, and with too little strength. Things have gone evilly since Theodred fell. We were driven back yesterday over the Isen with great loss. Many perished at the crossing.
Then at night fresh forces came over the river against our camp. All Isengard must be emptied, and Saruman has armed the wild hillmen and herd folk of Dunland beyond the rivers, and these also he loosed upon us. We were overmastered. The shield wall was broken. Erkenbrand of Westfold has drawn off those men he could gather towards his fastness in Helm's Deep. The rest are scattered. Where is Eomer? Tell him there's no hope ahead. He should return to Edoras before the wolves of Isengard come there.
Théoden had sat silent, hidden from the man's sight behind his guards. Now he urged his horse forward.
"Come, stand before me, Keol," he said. "I am here. The last host of the Eorlingers has ridden forth. It will not return without battle."
The man's face lightened with joy and wonder. He drew himself up. Then he knelt, offering his notched sword to the king.
"Command me, my lord," he cried, "and pardon me. I thought—"
"You thought I remained in Meadowseld, bent like an old tree under winter snow. So it was when you rode to war. But a west wind has shaken the boughs," said Théoden. "Give this man a fresh horse. Let us ride to the help of Erkenbrand."
While Théoden was speaking, Gandalf rode a short way ahead, and he sat there alone, gazing north to Isengard and west to the setting sun. Now he came back.
"Ride, Théoden," he said. "Ride to Helm's Deep. Go not to the fords of Isen, and don't tarry in the plain. I must leave you for a while. Shadowfax must bear me now on a swift errand."
Turning to Aragorn and Éomer and the men of the king's household, he cried,
"Keep well the Lord of the Mark till I return. Await me at Helm's Gate. Farewell."
He spoke a word to Shadowfax, and like an arrow from the bow the great horse sprang away. Even as they looked, he was gone. A flash of silver in the sunset, a wind over the grass, a shadow that fled and passed from sight. Snowmane snorted and reared, eager to follow, but only a swift bird on the wing could have overtaken him.
"What does that mean?" said one of the guards to Harmer.
"That Gandalf Greyhame has need of haste," answered Harmer. "Ever he goes and comes unlooked for."
"Wormtongue, were he here, wouldn't find it hard to explain," said the other.
"True enough," said Harmer. "But for myself, I'll wait until I see Gandalf again."
"Maybe you'll wait long," said the other.
The host turned away now from the roads of the fords of Isen and bent their course southward. Night fell, and still they rode on. The hills drew near, but the tall peaks of Three Hirn were already dim against the darkening sky. Still some miles away, on the far side of the Westfold Vale, lay a green coombe, a great bay in the mountains, out of which a gorge opened in the hills. Men of that land called it Helm's Deep, after a hero of old wars who had made his refuge there. Ever steeper and narrower, it wound inward from the north under the shadow of the Three Hirn, till the crow-haunted cliffs rose like mighty towers on either side, shutting out the light. At Helm's Gate, before the mouth of the deep, there was a heel of rock thrust outward by the northern cliff. There upon its spur stood high walls of ancient stone, and within them was a lofty tower. Men said that in the far-off days of the glory of Gondor, the sea kings had built here this fastness with the hands of giants. The Hornburg, it was called, for a trumpet sounded upon the tower, echoed in the deep behind, as if armies long forgotten were issuing to war from caves beneath the hills. A wall, too, the men of old had made from the Hornburg to the southern cliff, barring the entrance to the gorge. Beneath it, by a wide culvert, the deeping stream passed out. About the feet of the horn rocket wound, and flowed then in a gully through the midst of a wide green gore, sloping gently down from Helm's Gate to Helm's Dyke. Thence it fell into the deeping coombe, and out into the Westfold Vale. There in the Hornburg of Helm's Gate, Erkenbrand, master of Westfold on the borders of the Mark, now dwelt. As the days darkened with threats of war, being wise, he had repaired the wall and made the fastness strong. The riders were still in the low valley before the mouth of the